Welcome to the weekly Krishna Consciousness Radio program. This is Krishnakanta Devidasi. Due to COVID-19 lockdown, there will be no Sunday feast program until further notice. However, Sri Sri Radhagiridhari Temple is still open for darshan. Please maintain social distancing and practice good hygiene, wear a mask, and please don't forget to scan the QR code or write your name in the registration book. 2021 is Srila Prabhupada's 125th birth anniversary. Therefore, the subsequent radio programs will be the reading from Srila Prabhupada's biography called Srila Prabhupada Lila Amrita, written by His Holiness Satsarup Das Goswami Maharaj. Today we have Radha Padma Mataji reading from Chapter 2. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, reading from Srila Prabhupada's Lila Amrita, Chapter 2, continuing. College, marriage, and Gandhi's movement. He walked along the same broad street where for thousands of years the Rath Yatra procession had passed. In the market, shops displayed small carved and painted wooden murtis of Lord Jagannath. Although it was not Rath Yatra season, tourists were purchasing souvenirs, and in the temple they purchased Jagannath Prasadam. In the Jagannath temple, 56 gigantic offerings of cooked rice and vegetables were presented daily in worship before the deities of Jagannath, Balaram and Subhadra. Abhay entered the temple and saw the deities. On the side altar stood the murti of Lord Chaitanya and in his six-armed form, manifesting himself simultaneously as Krishna, Ram and the Sannyasi, Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya was famous in Puri, where he had spent the last 18 years of his life conducting Hare Krishna Kirtan with his followers and dancing ecstatically at the early Rath Yatra as the carts were wheeled along the main road. Surrounded by thousands of devotees, Lord Chaitanya had danced and swooned in the ecstasy of his intense love and separation from Lord Krishna. Passing over the parade route, Abhay recalled his own childhood pastimes, singing and dancing in the street, the miniature cart, the procession, Jagannath smiling, his father and mother, Radha Govinda. Somehow the fame of Lord Jagannath had inspired him as a child, and it remained within him all these years. When shall I go to Jagannath Puri? His childhood dreaming of Puri and Vrindavan, and his compulsively studying the train tables, scheming since the age of 5 to travel here, were based on more than just a desire to tour Puri's marketplace. And he was not satisfied by once seeing the deity in the noisy, crowded temple. He had been impelled to come to Puri as a pilgrim, and his motive was his devotion to Krishna. Now, nationalism was strongly influencing his life. He had recently married and was facing the decisions of graduation and career. Yet here he was, hardly more than a boy, walking alone in Puri, where Lord Chaitanya had lived and where Lord Krishna's Jagannath still resided. Abhay relished his break from the pressure of duties in Calcutta. He didn't know how the love he felt for Krishna and Krishna's pilgrimage place would fit into his life. He knew that Krishna was more important than anything else. He was God, the supreme controller and everyone's inner guide. But there was so much token, superficial service to God. Even the nationalist speakers, although they carried the Gita on their person, were more intent on nationalism than on Krishna. Only those who were sincere devotees knew the importance and attraction of Krishna, people like his father. An odd incident occurred at Puri. Gaur Mohan had given Abhay a letter of introduction to an acquaintance who lived in Jagannath Puri. Abhay went to see him and was well received. When the man was offering him lunch, however, Abhay noticed a small lump within one of the cooking pots. He questioned his host, who replied, "Oh, it is meat." Abhay was unable to restrain his shock. "No, what is this? I have never taken meat." Abhay looked at his host in astonishment. "I never expected this at Jagannath Puri." Ashamed, his host said, "I did not know. I thought this was the best." Abhay pacified the man, but he put his food aside and took no more meals there. After that, Abhay ate only the Jagannath Prasadam from the temple. Abhay stayed in Puri for 3 or 4 days, wandering around the holy places and visiting the famous Puri seaside with its sparkling beach and strongly pounding surf. Several times he recognized some of the priests from the Jagannath temple as they smoked cigarettes, and he heard of the other unsavory activities of the sadhus connected with the temple. What kind of sadhu were these who ate fish with the Jagannath prasadam and smoked? In this respect, he found Jagannath Puri disappointing. When Abhay returned home, he found his young wife crying. Then he heard how her friends had told her, "Your husband is not coming back." He told her not to worry. That was no truth, and there was no truth in the story. He had only gone for a few days and was now back. Although his marriage had only recently begun, Abhay was dissatisfied. Radharani Datta was an attractive young girl, but Abhay had never really liked her. He was thinking maybe a different wife would be better. A second wife besides this one. In India, it was socially acceptable to marry a second wife. So Abhay decided to take the matter into his own hands. He made arrangements to approach the parents of another girl. But when his father heard about it, he called Abhay and said, "My dear boy, you are eager to take a second wife, but I would advise you not to. It's Krishna's grace that your present wife is not to your liking. Take it as a great fortune. If you do not become too attached to your wife and family, that will help you in your future advancement and spiritual life." Abhay accepted his father's advice. He wanted to obey his father, and he appreciated the saintly viewpoint. But he remained thoughtful, a bit awed by his father's forethought. And he wondered how one day in the future he would be advancing in spiritual life and be grateful that his father had done this. "Your future advancement in spiritual life." Abhay liked the idea. He reconciled himself to the wife he had been given. Abhay Charan Day's name was included on the posted list of students who had passed the BA exams and who were invited to appear for the diploma. But Abhay had decided he didn't want a diploma from Scottish Church's college. Although as a graduate he would have a promising career, it would be a British tainted career. If Gandhi succeeded, India would soon be rid of the British. Abhay had made his decision, and when graduation day arrived, the college authorities learned of his rejecting his diploma. In this way, Abhay registered his protest and signaled his response to Gandhi's call. Gandhi's protest had increased its pitch in recent months. During the war, Indians had remained loyal to the crown, in hopes of generating British sympathy towards the cause of independence. But in 1919, England had passed the Rowlatt Act to repress the move for Indian freedom. Gandhi had then called on all Indians to observe a Hartal, a day in which people all over the country had stayed home from work and school in protest. Although it had been a non-violent protest, 1 week later in Amritsar, in the public square known as Jallianwala Bagh, British soldiers shot to death hundreds of unarmed, defenseless Indians who had gathered for a peaceful meeting. Gandhi then lost all faith in the intentions of the empire towards India. Calling for complete non-cooperation, he ordered a boycott of everything British, commodities, schools, courts, military honors. And Abhay, in refusing his degree, was moving to align himself more closely with Gandhi's independence movement. But his heart was not in it. Just as he had never given his heart to college studies, to earning a degree, to his wife, so he was reserved about becoming a full-fledged nationalist. Abhay had become inclined towards the cause, but he never really convinced. Now, out of school, out of work, caring little for his career, education, or wife, he remained at home. He tried his hand in writing poetry for the occasion of a friend's wedding. He read Srimad Bhagavatam and the latest speeches of Gandhi. He had no immediate plans. Gaur Mohan had his plans for Abhay, and the college degree had been an integral part of those plans. But Krishna, it seemed, had another plans. A political protest of refusing the Bachelor of Arts degree was more a mark of honor than a social stigma. And Gaur Mohan did not reproach his son for it. But Abhay still needed to take up some kind of work. Gaur Mohan approached his friend Kartik Bose and asked him to employ Abhay. Dr. Kartik Chandra Bose, an intimate friend, had been the family doctor since Abhay's childhood. He was a distinguished surgeon, a medical scholar, and a chemical industrialist. He had his own establishment, Bose's lab in Calcutta, where he manufactured drugs, soaps, and other products for the pharmaceutical industry. Dr. Bose was well known throughout India as the first Indian to manufacture pharmaceutical preparations that had formerly been monopolized by European firms. He agreed to accept Abhay as a department manager at his lab laboratory. Although Abhay knew little of the pharmaceutical industry or of management, he felt confident that by reading a few related books he could learn what he needed to know. But when this new young man was suddenly given the post of department manager, several workers became dissatisfied. Some of them were elderly and had been 40 years with the firm. They voiced their dissatisfaction among themselves and finally confronted Dr. Bose. "Why had this young man been put in charge?" Dr. Bose replied. "Oh, for that position, I needed someone I could trust like my own son. He's signing checks for 40,000 rupees. I could only entrust the personal handling of my accounts into that department to him. His father and I are very close, and this young man is known to me practically as my son." Gaur Mohan felt he had done his best. His prayers was that the principles of pure Vaishnavism he had taught his son would stay with him and guide him throughout his life. Gandhi and the cause of Swaraj had disrupted Abhay's college career, and Abhay was still inclined towards nationalism, but not so much for a political motive or as for a spiritual vision. So Gaur Mohan was content. He knew the marriage arrangement was not pleasing to Abhay, But Abhay had accepted his explanation that detachment from wife and family affairs would be good for spiritual advancement. And Abhay was showing an inherent disinterest in materialistic affairs. This also did not displease Gaur Mohan, to whom business had always been subservient to his worship of Lord Krishna. He had expected this. Now, Abhay had a promising job and would be making the best of his marriage. Gaur Mohan had done what he could, and he depended on Krishna for the ultimate result. Gandhi, bolstered by his emergence as a leader among the Congress party, now openly attacked the empire's exploitative cloth trade with India. England was purchasing raw cotton from India at the lowest prices, manufacturing it into cloth in the Lancashire mills in England, and then selling the monopolized cloth at high prices to the Indian millions. Gandhi's propaganda was that India should return to making her own cloth using simple spinning wheels and hand looms, thus completely boycotting the British-made cloth and attacking an economic base of Britain's power over India. Traveling by train throughout the country, Gandhi repeatedly appealed to his countrymen to reject all foreign clothes and wear only the simple coarse khadi produced from India's own cottage industry. Before the British rule, India had spun and woven her own cloth. Gandhi argued that by breaking the cottage industries, the British were sinking the Indian masses into semi-starvation and lifelessness. To set the example, Gandhi himself worked daily at a primitive spinning wheel and wore only a simple coarse loincloth and shawl. He would hold meetings and ask people to come forth and reject their imported cloth. On the spot, people would throw down heaps of cloth and he would set it ablaze. Gandhi's wife complained that the khadi was too thick and not convenient to wear while cooking. She asked if while cooking she could wear the light British-made cloth. "Yes, you're free to cook with your mill cloth on," Gandhi told her. "But I must exercise a similar freedom by not taking the meal so prepared." The cause of cottage industry appealed to Abhay. He, too, was not enamored with the modern industrial advances the British had introduced in India. Not only was simple living good for the long term, national economy of hundreds of millions of Indians, as Gandhi was emphasizing, but to Abhay, it was also the way of life most conducive to spiritual culture. Abhay put aside his mill manufactured cloth and took to wearing khadi. Now, his dress revealed him to whomever he met, British and Indian alike. He was a nationalist, a sympathizer of revolution. To wear khadi in India in the early 1920s was not a mere clothing fad. It was a political statement. It meant he was a Gandhian. End of chapter 2. Chapter 3. A very nice, saintly person. Quote, "There has not been, there will not be, such benefactors of the highest merit as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees have been. The offer of other benefits is only a deception. It is rather a great harm, whereas the benefit done by him and his followers is the truest and greatest eternal benefit. This benefit is not for one particular country, causing mischief to another, but it benefits the whole universe." Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Abhay's friend Narendranath Malik was insistent. He wanted Abhay to see a sadhu from Mayapur. Naren and some of his friends had already met the sadhu at his nearby ashram on Ultadanga Junction Road, and now they wanted Abhay's opinion. However, everyone within their circle of friends considered Abhay the leader. So if Naren could tell the others that Abhay also had a high regard for the sadhu, then that would confirm their own estimations. Abhay was reluctant to go, but Naren pressed him. They stood talking amidst the passers-by on the crowded early evening street. As the traffic of horse-drawn hackneys, ox carts, and occasional auto-taxis and motor buses moved noisily on the road, Naren put his hand firmly around his friend's arm, trying to drag him forward, while Abhay smiled but stubbornly pulled the other way. Naren argued that since they were only a few blocks away, they should at least pay a short visit. Abhay laughed and asked to be excused. People could see that the two young men were friends, but it was a curious sight. The handsome young man, dressed in white khadi kurta and dhoti, being pulled along by his friend. Naren explained that the sadhu, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, was a Vaishnava and a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One of his disciples, a sannyasi, had visited the Malik house and had invited them to meet Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. A few of the Maliks had gone to see him and had been very much impressed, but Abhay remained skeptical. "Oh no, I know all these sadhus," he said, "I'm not going." And Abhay had seen many sadhus in his childhood. Every day his father had entertained at least three or four in his home. Some of them were no more than beggars, and some even smoked ganja. Gaur Mohan had been very liberal in allowing anyone who wore the saffron robes of a sannyasi to come. But did it mean that though a man was no more than a beggar or ganja smoker, he had to be considered saintly just because he dressed as a sannyasi or was collecting funds in the name of building a monastery or could influence people with a speech? No. By and large, they were a disappointing lot. Abhay had even seen a man in his neighborhood who was a beggar by occupation. In the morning, when others dressed in their work clothes and went to their jobs, this man would put on saffron cloth and go out to beg and in this way earn his livelihood. But was it fitting that such a so-called sadhu be paid a respectful visit as if he were a guru? Naren argued that he felt that this particular sadhu was a very learned scholar and that Abhay should at least meet him and judge for himself. Abhay wished that Naren would not behave this way, but finally he could no longer refuse his friend. Together, they walked past the Parsnath Jain temple to one Ultadanga, with its sign Bhakti Vinod Asana, announcing it to be the quarters of the Gauriya Math. When they inquired at the door, a young man recognized Mr. Malik. Naren had previously given a donation and immediately escorted them up to the roof of the second floor and into the presence of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who was sitting and enjoying the early evening atmosphere with a few disciples and guests. Sitting with his back very straight, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati appeared tall. He was slender, his arms were long, and his complexion was fair and golden. He wore round bifocals with some frames. His nose was sharp, his forehead broad, and his expressions very scholarly, yet not at all timid. The vertical markings of Vaishnav Tilak on his forehead were similar to Abhay, as were the simple sannyas robes that draped over his right shoulder, leaving the other shoulder and half his chest bare. He wore tulasi neck beads, and the clay Vaishnav markings of Tilaka were visible in his throat, shoulder and upper arms. A clean white Brahminical thread was looped around his neck and draped across his chest. Abhay and Naren, having both been raised in Vaishnav families, immediately offered prostrated obeisances at the sight of the revered sannyasi. While the two young men were still rising and preparing to sit, before any preliminary formalities of conversation had begun, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta immediately said to them, "You are educated young man. Why don't you preach?" Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message throughout the whole world. Abhay could hardly believe what he had just heard. They had not even exchanged views, yet this sadhu was telling him what they should do. Sitting face to face with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Abhay was gathering his wits and trying to gain a comprehensible impression, but this person had already told them to become preachers and go all over the world. Abhay was immediately impressed, but he was not going to drop his intelligent skepticism. After all, there were assumptions in what the sadhu was sadhu had said. Abhay had already announced himself by his dress to be a follower of Gandhi, and he felt the impulse to raise an argument. Yet as he continued to listen to Bhaktisiddhanta speak, he also began to feel won over by the sadhu's strength and conviction. He could sense that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta didn't care for anything but Lord Chaitanya, and that this was what made him great. This was why followers had gathered around him, and why Abhay himself felt drawn, inspired and humbled, and wanted to hear more. But he felt obliged to make an argument to test the truth. I'll stop you.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.